talked with the elders and have let us know that they would like to be part of our family here at Lawson Road. And so we're excited to welcome you. And not from Texas, but you're moving from Texas. So it's a big change. And we summer is coming. We promise. Summer is coming. And you'll be grateful that you're here at that point. Maybe not quite so much today, but so excited to have you as part of our family. And if other folks don't get to know them, that's your fault. So thank you very much. All right, there we go. Today we wrap up our series on the fruit of the Spirit. And I don't know if we save the easiest to last, the best to last, the most difficult to last. You know, if you get a list of chores, you know, Saturday morning, you've got a bunch of things to do. You know, do you choose to do the easy ones first or the difficult ones first? You know, sometimes you want to build momentum, right? So you do the easy ones first and you sort of build momentum. And if you don't get to those hard ones by the end of the day, well, so be it, you know? You just ran out of time. On the other hand, there are people who want to get the hard ones done first. You know, break the back of the chores today, do it while you're fresh, and then you've got the rest of the day to sort of just take your time doing the easy ones. There's different ways of approaching that. And so I don't know what it was that the Apostle Paul had in mind as he worked his way through these fruit of the Spirit. The characteristics that God gives us that as part of our Christian faith that we express and that we live as evidence of God's presence in our lives. Now, as we get going today, I have this pointer with me. And it allows me to change the slides. And it doesn't always work. You see, the thing is, I like to be in control. I like to know when it is that the slide's going to change and not just guess. And so we've replaced several of these pointers over the years so that I can have more control. And we're still not completely there. Sometimes it has a bug. But in general, I think most of us like to be in control of what we're doing. Right? How about the idea of autonomous cars? Right? Self-driving vehicles. Do you feel like you could sit in that and relax and just say, take me to Lawson Road for church on Sunday? And it navigates from your house to the church building all on its own while you eat your breakfast and drink your coffee. Yeah. I think one of the biggest barriers to widespread acceptance of that is I have no control over it. What if the car starts doing something and I can't stop it? It's me versus the computer. And so there's these fears that we have that are connected to the loss of control that we might experience. I think it's also this sense of control or desire for control is one of the reasons, just one of the reasons, that following Jesus can intimidate people. It involves giving up control of our own lives. Okay? And it's like, no, I've worked through my teen years to become an autonomous individual. Right? I worked hard for my autonomy to be a self-driving person. And now you're telling me that I have to give up control to Jesus, to someone I can't see or hear. And so we don't tend to like being told what to do. We acknowledge, perhaps, that we don't have all the answers. But we like to have all the answers, don't we? It's one of the things that as when we go through graduate school training for ministry, or perhaps, I don't know for sure, but you know, teachers, there's these sort of different teaching positions, is that we have to be trained to be able to give the most difficult answer known to the classroom. I don't know. Right? You get this question and you say, I don't know. Because if you're teaching, there's an assumption there that you have some expertise in that area. And if a student can ask a question that you don't know the answer to, then it diminishes your expertise, doesn't it? Right? And the more times you say, I don't know, they might say, look, what are we paying this person for? Yeah. Right? I'm supposed to have the answers. But it's not just as teachers. The reason that has to be hammered into teachers is I think most of us are more likely to give an answer that we think maybe is correct than just to say, I don't know, and leave it at that. There's this pressure, in a sense, to perform. And so with Jesus, we come to him and we say, Jesus, there's a lot of stuff that I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that I can't do. There's clear limits to my abilities. And so I need you to help me navigate life. And again, it's sort of speaking against this sense of autonomy that we've worked so hard to develop. 18 times, at least 18 times in the New Testament letters, the writers, God through the writers, tells the readers to submit. Okay? It's favorite word in America, isn't it? Submit. Yeah? Yeah. Submit to God. Submit to the law of God. Submit to civil authorities. Submit to your husband or your wife. Submit to your church leaders. Submit to one another. Sounds very un-American, in fact. Right? This repetition of the need for God's people to submit. But I'm being my best self. Yeah, you need to submit. Okay? Because we recognize our limits. When we're submitting to someone, do you know what we're not doing? We're not in control of the situation. And that can be terrifying. And so we come to the fruit of the Spirit for today. Because when we submit, we're trusting that the person we're submitting to won't abuse our trust in them for their own purposes. But submitting requires an intentional decision on our part, doesn't it? Right? It says, yeah, I am going to trust this person. I'm going to do what they tell me to do. Now, it could be law enforcement, and they have ways of enforcing the law that make the submission, you know, not quite as voluntary as, you know, it sounds in other circumstances. But nonetheless, we make this choice, don't we? Are we going to submit? Are we going to resist? Are we going to submit to our spouse? Are we going to resist? Are we going to submit to our employer? Are we going to resist? Well, how are we going to live life? Where are we going to submit? We make these choices. To this point, in the fruit of the Spirit, we've been looking at positive virtues or positive character traits. The first one is love, followed by patience, goodness, gentleness, and today, self-control. Okay, well done. You couldn't do that 8 weeks ago. Self-control is certainly a positive virtue. Okay? It's a positive virtue. It's also measured not just in what we do. Like, self-control is something we do, but it's also something we do by not doing things. Does that make sense? Right? It's you need to control yourself. And you control yourself by not doing out of control things. Okay? So whereas we might say goodness is about doing good, doing nothing isn't doing good. Right? Faithfulness is you're in there for the long haul, right? Gentleness is how you conduct yourself with other people. Do you assert yourself? You seek to make people around you submit to what you want. And so there are ways that we act towards others, ways we interact, things that we do and how we do them. But self-control is about what we choose not to do. Another thing that's interesting about self-control is that we may all be working to develop self-control in different areas of our lives. You see, there is no one application of self-control. Perhaps as this slide came up on the screen, and you think, oh, that's talking about, and I don't know if you think of what's going on in your life or what's going on in the life of somebody nearby you, but it could be any number of things that I know this person, and they just can't control this about themselves. Okay? It may be the person in the mirror, but it may be someone else, right? I know this person and they can't control this aspect of their life. But let's say one person can't control their anger. And over here, another person doesn't seem to be able to control their gossip. And we might say, well, that person has a gossip problem, and this person has an anger problem, or we could say they both have a self-control problem. Are they able to work within boundaries, within limits of how it is that God wants them to live? And so self-control is not just one particular expression or one particular habit that we need to change or remove from our lives. It can change over time too, right? You might say, well, I used to have a problem with self-control in this area, but I got over that only to discover I have a problem with self-control in this area. like it isn't something that we can say, oh yeah, I've mastered self-control. Usually we'll say, I've mastered self-control of this. But we're still going to run into other areas. So there's a whole list of different ways that it can be expressed. Now, given the book of Galatians and sort of the way that it's been written, well, I think we need to bear in mind that the fruit of the Spirit in verses 22 and 23 of Galatians chapter 5 is written as a contrast to the works of the flesh that are found in verses 19 through 21. So I'm going to read these works of the flesh, and I want you just to think about self-control as a virtue in the fruit of the Spirit in contrast to this list that I'll be reading. The acts of the flesh are obvious: sexual immorality, impurity, and debauchery, idolatry and witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions and envy, drunkenness, orgies, and the like. I warn you, as I did before, that those who live like this will not inherit the kingdom of God. And so, if you're in growth groups, one of the questions is, how many of those things on that list would self-control fix? Okay, it's not all of them. Some of them have different problems. But how many of them would self-control fix? And so when we see self-control, he's not necessarily just talking about, I play computer games too late at night. I read books, too many books, and I don't get my household chores done. Yes, they may be examples of a lack of self-control. But think of the list of this works of the flesh that he is, that is the reason he's giving the list of fruit of the Spirit. There's sort of these big issues, there's sin-related issues. And he's saying this is the cure for them. And so Paul wants people to conduct themselves appropriately towards other people and towards God. I mentioned last week that these last three fruit of the Spirit that are given here, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, are highly valued in Greek society. Whether you go back to Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, these kind of names, I don't know if I could put them in order, but I know the names, right? And so, but in their writings and in their teaching, they value these three traits. And so Paul is not writing to a Gentile audience. He's giving them something familiar here. He's saying, yeah, God values these things as well. And yet you guys, so God values these things, your Greek culture values these things, and yet this is going on in the church, right? That is contrary to both of those things. And so when we're talking here, the Greek virtue relates to the ability to control passions and to resist temptation. And I think that's largely what Paul is talking about. The ability to control passions and to resist temptation when he talks about self-control. Right? Not about keeping a regular bedtime or setting my alarm and not needing the snooze button to get out of bed, that I can actually get out of bed the first time the alarm goes off. Stop pointing at that other person. And so it's not that kind of self-control. It's the passions and the sin and the things that cause conflict in our lives with other people and with God. Oscar Wilde, not one of the 12 apostles, he had this quote: "The only thing I cannot resist is temptation." Okay? That kind of leaves it wide open, doesn't it? The only thing I cannot resist is temptation. That's a lack of self-control. Now, Oscar Wilde also has a quote that says that the best way, or the only way, to overcome temptation is to give in to it. He was convinced that the more you attempted within yourself to resist something, the more enticing it became. And it would continue to always be a temptation as long as you didn't take it, didn't do it. Okay, think of Eve in the garden, right? She saw that tree. She decided the fruit was good to eat. And so it was always going to be a temptation for her. until she just couldn't control it anymore. She ate it, and then the fruit was no longer a temptation. Well, that wasn't as good as I thought. All right. So that's the Oscar Wilde school of temptation and self-control. But the New Testament gives us some different ways of going about it. What I think that self-control is one, this trait, this virtue that perhaps we often overlook. Titus chapter 2, verse 6. Likewise, this is giving advice here in Titus. So Paul is writing to Titus, who is kind of like the visiting preacher at the church in Crete. And so Paul is giving him advice. And so he's going through these different demographic groups. Titus, here's how you're to treat the older men, the older women, the younger men, the younger women. And when he gets to the younger men, he says, likewise, it's not the complete list, but likewise, urge the younger men to be self-controlled. Okay. That's his starting point, okay, for this group of people. Urge them to be self-controlled. 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 7. For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power, of love, and of self-control. And I think that if we were to say, what grabs your attention out of this verse? Perhaps it would begin with, God has not given us a spirit of fear. That's good to know. That's important to know. That's reassuring to know that God has not given us a spirit of fear. He doesn't want us to go through life fearful. So what sort of spirit has he given us? He's given us a spirit of power. That'll take care of that fear, right? That's good. He's given us a spirit of love. Well, we all like love, right? We talk about it a lot. We want to be loving people. We want to be loved. And we understand God is love. That makes sense. He's given us a spirit of power. He's given us a spirit of love. I think for the most part, we stop the verse at about that point. Okay. The third one, though, a spirit of self-control. Okay. It's like, oh, that's interesting. So in order to sort of push back against fear, He's given us a spirit of self-control. The ability to resist, to control passions, and to resist temptation. And if we have that spirit, we don't need to be fearful. And I wonder, you know, how many of us would think of self-control as an antidote to fear? Obviously more that can be discussed there. 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 14. And it's interesting when we see a term showing up with different authors. And again, I know God's the author of everything, but it means that it's a value or a teaching that's important to Paul. Sometimes preachers have a, you know, get on their soapbox. And so if Paul says something a lot, you go, wow, that was really important to Paul. But when you get Paul and Peter saying the same thing, you go, well, that was really important to the church, right? In different circumstances, different settings. And so Peter, writing to a very different audience to Paul, says, as obedient children, do not conform to the evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance. Okay, so it doesn't say self-control there. And I know that. But the evil desires, that's the giving in to the passions, to the temptations that Paul has been talking about. And so Peter is, in different words, he's saying, exhibit self-control. Don't give in to the things that you know you shouldn't do. Okay? That was what you did when you didn't know better. Now that you know better, control yourself. Don't live that way. Live in a way that honors God. And then one more, again in 1 Peter 5, 8. Be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Okay? And again, I think that in growth groups, I just write the lessons, I don't write the answers, but I think this one, if you're in a growth group, take note of this verse, I think you'll be able to use it. But be alert and of sober mind. And sometimes that sober mind is the idea of self-control. Okay? What is the opposite? If we think of sobriety, what's the opposite of sobriety? It's someone who has no control, right? Who's given over to their passions. Now, I want to be careful here because the answer to somebody that has an addiction is not telling them to stop it, right? It just doesn't work like that. I know there's always the one person that used to smoke, you know, 10 packs a day, and then they were driving down the road and they threw their pack out the window and we'll overlook the littering, but they did that and they never picked up another cigarette the rest of their life. Okay? And that person somehow becomes the norm for everyone else that struggles to give up something. Right? It's difficult to give things up, and just telling somebody that they should do it doesn't mean that it happens. Okay, so when we're talking about self-control, there's a distinction between the things that we actually can do and the things that, through a decision, and things that we're going to need a lot of help with. Okay, and again, that's different for different people. But the self-control can be, I want that. I want to take that process. I want to work towards that. I want to take the steps necessary for that. But we just need to be careful that we don't just think self-control means telling people to stop it and they stop it. Okay? Our lives are a little more complex than that. Nonetheless, your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone without defenses, looking for someone who's susceptible, looking for someone who's not on the lookout, looking for someone to devour, to destroy, to mess up their life, to drag them away from God. Okay? And so this is the world that we live within, the environment that we live within. And so being alert, controlling ourselves, yeah, focusing on God, these things are an antidote to this kind of attack. And so self-control, if we go back to the fruit of the Spirit, I think it really forms a bookend with love. I mentioned in our very first one and several times, very first sermon on this series and several times since, that one way of looking at this is to view love as the, like put a colon after love. And so that everything else describes love. Okay? Not that love is just one of the nine, you know, traits on the list. Here it is, nine. One of the nine traits on the list. But that the other eight describing love. But I think it's also legitimate to say that the bookends of love and self-control are important to what's in the middle. Right? What's in the middle is dependent both on our attitude of love towards God and others, and self-control, in many cases, is what allows us to live in that way. And here I think is where it gets really sort of funny. Because what is the fruit of the Spirit? It's something where we talked about the example of a tree, right? And how the fruit doesn't grow itself. That once the fruit drops on the ground, it's not growing anymore. Okay? It starts to decay. The fruit is produced by the tree. And it's the health of the tree that produces healthy fruit. And so the fruit of the Spirit is a way of saying the Spirit is the tree. The Spirit is what is producing this in our lives. But self-control sounds a lot like something I do, doesn't it? Like, I take control of myself. I give that up. I make this change. Right? I don't do that anymore. I don't react or respond that way. But the Spirit is the one that is growing that fruit. And so I know that the word is self-control, but in my head, the way that I've come to think about this is that really it's Spirit control. Okay? That really it's Spirit control, because the Spirit is the one that's growing this in me. And as the Spirit takes control of my life, and as the Spirit grows within me, then naturally I'm able to place better boundaries on my life. Better able to live within the boundaries that God has put in place for me, to submit to Him better. I have a couple of things to say and then I'm done. When I look for examples of self-control in Scripture, maybe you could come up with different ones, but we read earlier from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 23, and the description there of Jesus on the cross, and we see several times that He is encouraged. He is scorned, He is mocked, okay? He is humiliated as people yell at Him and say, hey, if you're the King, if you're the Messiah, if you're this great guy, if you're the Son of God, if you're who you say you are, if you could do all that stuff that people are saying that you did, then save yourself. Get down off the cross. And I think I gave this example when we were talking about faithfulness, that Jesus went all the way through, because how tempting would it have been to, even just for a moment, to jump off the cross, bang some heads together, kick some of those folks over the other side of the Jordan, and then, if necessary, jump back up on the cross again and finish what he'd started. Right? And yet, he didn't. Do we believe that he could have? Right? And yet, he didn't. He had the self-control. I'm not going to put my hand up and say, I could have done that. Yeah, I could have stayed there. Yeah, give me your worst. Right? Let's do a roast right now while I'm at my lowest. But Jesus showed the self-control. He demonstrated the self-control because of the love that he had for humanity. Love for the world. And so we have these bookends of love, and John 3:16 says God sent his Son because he loved the world. And the self-control of Jesus on the other end, to go through with what he started. Not to allow his passions, his emotions to overcome him, and to seek to make things right in the way that he was being encouraged as he hung there. And so Jesus is our example of all of these traits, and I believe in each sermon I've made that application. As we close, I just have one other sort of perspective on this. This is our month of prayer and fasting. And I think fasting is something that we struggle, we're not familiar with. And if you haven't been at Lawson Road that long, you may wonder why we do it. We do have a prayer guide downstairs, and whether you're fasting or not, you can take the prayer guide. And we're working our way through Psalms. Last week was lament, this week is remembering what God's done for us. But fasting is a way for us to practice self-control. To say, yeah, I'm going to make sure that I control whatever it is that I'm fasting from. It doesn't control me. Because it is easy in our lives to get into routines and rhythms, and those things determine what it is that we do or that we do next. And fasting sort of breaks that and says, no, I can give that up. I can interrupt this. I can do something different because I want to use that time, that moment, to think about God. I'll give an example. This year, I have, it wasn't really a New Year's resolution, but it's just something that happened. I've turned my radio off when I'm driving, by and large. And so it's silent, which is a little scary, I've got to be honest. And so my fasting this time is actually just to bring prayer into the fasting that I'm already doing. Because fasting is always done with prayer. And so my goal is to have a list, whether it be the prayers that are submitted today, you know, here, or a list of my family. And then as I just go throughout the day, I can talk to God about those people and those needs that show up. And there may be a day of thanks in there as well. But that's how I'm using our month of prayer and fasting. Can I do that? Am I going to have the self-control to make that list, to pay attention to it when I'm driving, when I'm in the car? Or am I going to be caught up, you know, in other things that are going on and other thoughts? And so fasting, one of the things it does is allows us to practice this fruit of the Spirit. Because these things, I believe, do take practice. That's why we have to get them from the Spirit. Some of us are going to be more controlled, more disciplined than others, but that doesn't give any of us an excuse, right, to say, oh, that's not for me. This is what God is working in our lives through His Spirit to make us more like Him so that we can represent Him to the world. I hope this study has been one that's beneficial for you. And over the next couple of weeks, we'll be moving forward towards Easter as that approaches at the end of the month.